Joining me on the comments today is Ken Mahal. Ken has got a bio that would take us all hour to fill you in on, but I'm going to just highlight a few of his many, many accomplishments. Ken's a graduate of the Harvard International Business School in Vevey, Switzerland. He's got a degree in architecture from the Chicago Technical College and University of Minnesota. Ken's got the distinction of qualifying as an architect, being licensed to practice architecture in 50 states, the District of Columbia, the Virgin Islands, and the United Kingdom. And at age 30, he was the driving force to incorporate Bloomington, Minnesota. He served as a volunteer and vice chairman of the Bloomington Planning Commission for 6 years, creating the master plan and regulations still intact, and that won the Best City Award twice. Due to his insistence on for the strongest zoning possible for a strategic piece of land, the world-renowned Mall of America is now located there. And he's also president of the Nevada Senior Coalition and monthly columnist for the Las Vegas Senior Press. He's active on growth, air, water, traffic, crime, and much more in southern Nevada. Are you there, Ken?
Yes, I am. And on a lovely day, not being in Nevada, I'm in Minnesota visiting my children.
That's right, and you're very graciously accepted to come on the show, take time away, precious time away from your children, to join us, and I really thank you for doing that.
Well, I'm happy to do it.
As I mentioned, you've got an absolutely incredible bio here, and you've done a tremendous amount in your life. I think what blew me away was the fact that you took the time to get licensed in every state, plus the District, Virgin Islands, and the United Kingdom. When did you have time to do everything else?
Well, I did the registrations in my spare time. Well, we practiced in every state, so it behooved me to understand what it meant to do business in all 50 states, and of course we did a lot of business in the District of Columbia, and we did about a $1 billion project in Saudi Arabia, which was very interesting, where we built two complete 5,000-person cities because we were building two 500-bed hospitals for the cities, for the Arabs. So we did a little mini cities at that time even.
And did you have homeowner associations?
No, we did not.
And they're working, they're functioning.
Yes, that's right. And no, we didn't need homeowner associations. You know, I was thinking this morning, Sue, after having been on several of Mr. Testa's shows and visiting with you, I believe with so many homeowners associations, one of these days you're going to have a hard time selling those homes to the people who normally are moving up the ladder from a first-time home to the second level of home because the cost imposed on them by the homeowner association cost will probably be enough that tens of thousands of them will not qualify for a mortgage to be able to buy into the development.
Well, one of my concerns has always been the fact that we're beginning now that associations are aging, and they've had 30, 40 years behind them where just homeowners. I mean, there's nothing wrong with these people. They're people who stepped up to the plate and took on the task of trying to accomplish something that's just unwieldy. But these guys just did not have the knowledge to manage a multi-million dollar corporation, and now we're beginning to see where a lot of them are having financial problems. They're having to assess special assessments. They have infrastructure that's crumbling and falling down, and they don't have the money to do anything with it. Their only alternative is to, you know, if somebody doesn't have, I mean, I've heard of special assessments upwards of $50,000, even $70,000. Now, when you're, you know, slapped with one of those special assessments and you don't have it, the association then has the power to come in and file a lien and foreclose. How many of these do you have to foreclose on before you end up with all these houses that, and still nobody's going to buy them?
Well, that's I'm afraid that's going to be an increasing problem, and I think you've really brought it out in the open, and it's really very scary. But I don't know what the out is, because once that thing is cast in law, there'll always be enough attorneys to keep you from doing something sensible to get rid of it. And you're right. All that homeowners association needs to do is probably pick up 8 or 10 houses, and I suspect, or condos. I would suspect many of those associations would be facing bankruptcy just to maintain those places.
Well, some of them already are, and you know, I think we're and my guess is that there are a lot more that we haven't heard about.
Right.
And one of the big problems that people are complaining about is the complete lack of adult supervision. There's no government oversight, and we're hearing more and more about people, you know, management coming in and embezzling. In fact, we do have one story today on that, you know, when we go to the news portion, we'll be covering that. So, I mean, these are all things that people need to be aware of, whether they want to stick there. You know, whether they want to subject their private property to
right.
this kind of abuse. But you put another spin on it when I talked to you the other day. You said that the local municipalities or the local government, in a way, was subsidizing these, and your property has not increased in value?
Yes, that's very important for people to understand, particularly the way these fast growth communities are growing. Las Vegas is a very bad example of all the things you can do wrong. What has happened is that the politicians are so happy to have a large developer come with 5, 6, 7, 10,000 acres of land for development, and they'll call it a planned community. And what happens is the politicians will usually cut a deal where they'll approve that massive plan, and then they end up having the taxpayer subsidize many of the infrastructure. And I did a study in just Las Vegas, and my best estimate was that for each unit, each living unit, which means house and even in the apartments and the condos,
mm-hmm.
they're letting the developer get by on about a $50,000 free ride in infrastructure costs for each unit. Well, what's happened is, as Clark County is a bad example of the things not to do that nobody even talks about, they've increased their debt from almost nothing since, well, there was no debt there, literally speaking, in 18 years when I first moved there, but in the last dozen years, they've increased the public debt to about $10 billion. Nobody talks about it. Nobody even, not even the news media. So on top of the costs that people have, just normal living, and then if you're in an association, if we have a meltdown, or I should say when we have a meltdown of our economy, and as in Houston about 15 years ago, when their economy bottomed out, they had 250,000 homes go into bankruptcy in 1 year alone. If we have something like that, say in a Las Vegas or Phoenix or one of these high growth areas with such big debt, you'll have an Orange County bankruptcy sure as heck on your hands.
And in these areas that you mentioned, you're talking about high concentrations of retirees.
Very high concentration of retirees, that's correct.
So, smart growth, is it?
No, it's not smart growth. That's just a new spin on growth with no control. And I've been through that with these people that are using this name to try and fool people that there is such a thing as smart growth. I have to tell you, the best example I ever had was 50-some years ago when we did the planning for Bloomington, Minnesota. And Bloomington was a township at that time. It was two-thirds the land mass of the city of Minneapolis. You know that after 50 years, this house I'm sitting in here right now is the old Mahal Estate, which has been here almost the 50, it has been here 50 years. And our planning was such that to this day, they have less than 100,000 people in Bloomington. Whereas in Minneapolis, they have close to 750,000 in the city proper. But that just shows you a difference that people who care are willing to support and live in as a community. So smart growth today is really not seven people per acre or six people per acre. It's getting more like 20 or 30 or 40 up to 200 people per acre. And that just, that really should be called dumb growth, not smart growth.
I like that. The anti-sprawlers, if you will, that you know, they want to just concentrate everything on these mini little acres. What they're doing here now, which is a little bit scary, is they're taking metro stops as hubs, and they're tearing everything around them down, and they're putting up these massive, huge, tall buildings where you have residential and commercial and, you know, you've got stores and you've even got shops underneath so that you don't really have to do anything. I mean, we seem to be trying to get away from the car and the road, and all of these are within walkways just across the street, or some of them even have these walkways, sky up in the sky, where you can just walk across and get on the metro and go. But it would seem to me that you've got this massive humanity that's all concentrated on a handful of acres, literally 4 or 5 acres. And you've got hundreds and just oodles of people there. But and the idea for this presumably is that we don't want more cars, and we don't want to encroach on the countryside. We want to keep that all pristine and clean. And I've got an article here that's called Encourage Growth, and it's written by Daniel Simmons, who's an environmental policy analyst with a DC think tank, and he says that back in 1945 that we were using only 1% of the land area mass in the United States and for urban centers, but by 1992, after 50 years of so-called sprawl, only 3% of America is considered urban land.
Right.
So do we need to do this? Do we need to concentrate all of this in small areas?
Well, no, we don't, and we shouldn't. It's very interesting, and I was just, since you and I have talked, I was thinking of things I was involved in here when I was running the company, and back in the early 70s, we had a very prime piece of land right on the Mississippi, on the St. Paul side, right across the river from Minneapolis, in the university area, really a prime piece of real estate, which had older clapboard houses, and as so often happens, cities allow very nice neighborhoods to be run down, and it's the city fathers and the bureaucracies that usually allow urban decay. Then the solution is to just wipe it out and put in 18, 20, 30-story buildings and put people into honeycombed cubicles and call that the new idea for city planning. Well, I had come up with the idea in that area what we should do, and it would have been a rebirth of the area, that we should create a new city center over there, but I had an entirely different idea of open spaces and low-rise and single-story residential and parks, because the human element takes more than just being put into a honeycomb cubicle. So what's very interesting, instead of doing what I had suggested, they did do just what you're talking about. They built these high-rises, and one building created a shadow over the open areas to the next building and so on, and they turned into absolute disasters.
Yeah. They're what I call concrete jungles, because that's all you have is just all this massive concrete all over the place. And
yeah, well for example, I go a long ways back. When I went to school in Chicago, I stayed in what was called the old Gold Coast on the south side on Prairie Avenue. And matter of fact, and these were all old brownstone homes, gorgeous homes, and the one that I was in was Admiral Perry's house. Well, they decided in their wisdom that they should, you know, some years after I was out of there and out of school, that they would tear those nice old brownstones down. They put up these high-rise jungles, and you know, the crime got so bad and the livability was so terrible. And they didn't last 30 years, and they tore down all of those 18 and 20-story units that they built in there. And I'm not sure what they've done since that time. I was so unhappy that they decided to tear those grand old brownstones down to begin with.
I agree with you. It always breaks my heart to see some of these beautiful old buildings coming down and being replaced by pieces, you know, by buildings that seem to be put together with old matchboxes and scotch tape. They don't last long.
Well, what happens, government gets involved, and if there's any kind of federal government money, then the idiocy takes place. You have to give them more for less, which usually means you don't give them anything.
I like that. You're absolutely correct. I mean, we seem to be trying to put everybody... We seem to be trying to saddle everyone, not only with a mortgage, but also with having to maintain just some common area as well, and not only taking that mortgage, but using that as an asset for something that's commonly owned. And somehow it just doesn't seem to be working, Ken.
No, you know, I was just thinking... In the city of Bloomington, I doubt if there's one homeowners association.
Really?
Right. And I think the reason for that, and I think the reason out here is that we tended to develop smaller parcels of land, and the reason for that is that we have a sensitivity about saving our trees and our contours out here. Where if a developer were to build on 40 acres here or 100 acres here, they would attempt to save every tree they possibly could. Out in Las Vegas, for example, we have a wide open desert. We have a gradual slope. I mean, the drainage is perfect. There's no big gullies or anything. And they're not happy unless they take 5,000 acres at one time. And they don't like what nature did to it. They have to reshape it all, and it never makes any sense to me at all.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I don't know if a lot of people listening remember the terminology WPA, but during the Depression era, there was the Work Project Administration, and that's what I call it out in Las Vegas. These are WPA projects. They make a lot of work for people moving earth and laying tile and hauling dirt and that kind of thing. Really low level is what it is. I mean, it usually has to do with grading the dirt, hauling the gravel, and reprocessing, which is kind of stupid. And when they get done, all they did is, we now have the record of being the fifth worst air quality in the United States in the Las Vegas Valley.
We're going to be talking about that, because I don't know if there's a tie-in between all of this. But before we get there, I kind of want to deviate a little bit and talk about the associations. And one of the things that associations present as a benefit is that you're going to have everything is going to be the same. There's this sameness about it, and all of the colors are going to be the same. The builder picks out the colors of the home and the shutters and the trim and the front door and all of that. From an architect's standpoint, is there anything aesthetically pleasing about that?
Seems pretty monotonous to me. Each of we individuals look different, act different to whatever degree it is, but we are different, and each of us have certain preferences. All I can say is we've managed here in Bloomington. I just happen to be sitting here where I have a lot to do with it when I was about 50 years younger. And it's rather amazing where we didn't put those restrictions on people. The simplest homes to this day in East Bloomington are as well kept as the day they were built. And some of those homes are 800 or 900 square feet, if you can imagine, Sue.
What do you think that is?
I think it was it's the attitude of the community when it's planned to begin with, and the people who follow along in administration. And most politicians are too stupid to make any serious changes. If it's working, they mostly don't screw it up too badly, unless a big developer comes along and gives them a con job and gives them a few dollars for campaign. Then I think is when things begin to go downhill. So no, I'm not in agreement that everything should look alike. In fact, I've looked at Sun City. I call it Sin City North and Sin City South out in Las Vegas. As a matter of fact, we did the medical center in the original Sun City over in Scottsdale, Arizona. And I've looked a number of times in both of these projects in Las Vegas. And I guess what gets my attention is the sameness. And I wouldn't want to live there for anything.
Now you're not only an extremely highly trained architect. You've obviously, you know, if you've got your licenses in all 50 states and 3 other countries as well, you've been around for a while and you've got the training and you've got the eye for this. And you're telling me that this sameness is not aesthetically pleasing.
Well, I'm saying it's very boring.
I agree with you. I mean, I told you when I talked to you the other day, I always wanted to be an architect. That's
right.
Always been my first passion. But yeah, I agree with you. I mean, why these cookie cutter things? Why, what's so wonderful about them? And they sell it as a plus.
Well, I think what it does is kind of lulls people's minds to sleep, and that's the worst thing that can happen. And I happen to live in a little development that has no homeowners association in it, and okay, so I have a couple of sloppy neighbors, so what? I mean, but Las Vegas is a sloppy town to begin with, so you sort of have to take that into consideration. But I'll have to tell you, when I wanted to build what they call a California room, I was able to do it. When I wanted to build a sunscreened canopy over my little backyard, I was able to do it. And when I wanted to build my 10 foot by 40 foot by 4 foot deep lap pool, I was able to do it. I couldn't do any of those things in the homeowners association.
Well, you probably could. You'd have to get permission, and then, you know, if they like you, they'll let you have it, and if they don't like you, they'll put you through all kinds of hoops. But I was reading an article that really didn't have anything at all to do with homeowner associations, but it was about Las Vegas, and I took a quote out of it, which I thought was pretty appropriate, and it kind of ties into something you just said. But let me ask you your thoughts on this. The quote is, "Las Vegas is blending high, low, and middle brow into consumer-friendly no-brow."
Oh, that's a dandy.
You like that one?
That's a dandy. Well, I actually think what they're doing is, I think they're building class separation myself. I think whoever wrote that is not quite on top of it, because I think more and more there is a separation of people because of these developments that are being built.
But are they being shunted into them like cattle? You know, they're being promised carefree living, they're being promised security, they're being promised the fact that their neighbors aren't going to put their cars up on blocks.
Right.
They're being promised that every fresh coat of paint in the association is going to be the same boring old shade of white or beige or whatever it is. But is that taking it into a consumer friendly no brow?
Well, it probably is, and I think of Lakes Las Vegas, which is a multi-billion-dollar development out south of town, over the wash that the whole valley drains through, that they created 300-acre man-made lake and the housing out, well, you know, the lots. I'm not even sure you could buy a lot for $250,000 there anymore. And the houses are, you know, up in the, probably the cheapest house you can buy is $500,000-$600,000, but they're in the millions. And what they say is these people come in from L.A. with their helicopters over the weekend and land there. and it's what they call all Mediterranean design.
Mm-hmm.
How dull. You
yeah.
know, how dull. Everything is going to have the same kind of colorless facade on it. It's all going to have a similarity in its design and so forth. In other words, there would have been a place where there's real bucks, okay? You could have used some creativity, but what they've done is they've leveled it all so that you could go from one to the other and it kind of mushes out. And maybe that's the way people want it, so they don't have to be bothered with anything outside of just what's on their daily routine. I'm just not sure about this anymore.
It's sort of like wearing a uniform. You don't have to wonder about what to put on in the morning.
And you know, when I was in the Navy, I couldn't get rid of it quick enough.
Me too. I went to school. I had to wear a uniform to school, so
yeah.
I hated it.
Yeah. I think you ought to touch on something a lot of people don't think about, is who's the real culprit in creating these homeowners associations. And the real culprit is the bureaucrat and the politicians in charge of the various cities,
right,
and the counties who are running the government. These are the people who really, everyone that's unhappy with the homeowners association today, as I told them in Las Vegas, you ought to start knocking on the doors of the county commission chambers. You ought to start knocking on the doors of the city council. A lot of people are, as they have in Nevada, southern Nevada, have gone to the state legislature. Well, what you have there is 63 of those yin-yangs who usually go whichever way the political contributions go, but you'd be better off going to, say, the county commission where there's seven commissioners, or the city council where there's six or seven. If you could bring in 200 people, you could change their mind, and you could begin to get things done differently, and I'm afraid that's where the problem really has started, is these huge mammoth developments come before the city or the county if they're in charge, and they say, wow, we don't have to do much work, we just sign on the dotted line, we don't really care what these regulations are going to do to these people afterwards. In other words, they've sort of isolated that part of their entity from the body whole and said, okay, you're kind of a government by yourself. That's really terrible.
It is. It's exactly what they've done. It's a private government, and the local municipalities do mandate them, whether by, you know, actual mandates or de facto mandates.
Right.
And what they'll tell you if you go to the local municipalities, at least here in Fairfax County, is it's a private corporation, and we cannot get involved. But you're right. I think it's the numbers. The numbers are going to speak. People have got to stop believing everything they're told, I think, because
that's very true.
You know, there we go back to the no-brow. You know, we're going
right.
to protect you, and we're going
right.
to increase your property values
right.
and all of that. We're going to take a very short break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Okay.
Don't go away. The Industry on the Commons with me today is Ken Mahal, and he's very graciously taken time out from his vacation with his family in Minnesota to join us, and I thank him very much for that. Going to do a couple of quick news items. Speaking of Do You Hear the People Sing, I'm going to give you an update on a flag flap that's sort of captured the imagination of the entire country. There's a guy in Jupiter, Florida, who's being fined by the court $100 a day because he's got the temerity of flying the flag from a flagpole. The association claims that the flagpole itself is an eyesore, and they will allow him to fly the flag from a bracket on his house. And he says, no, I've already got permission for the pole. And so there we go. We're at a standstill. Now, what's really interesting is that A lot of people have, for some reason, a lot of people have rallied behind this guy. We've had flag flaps in the past. And all the retired veterans in Florida, who number 1.77 million of them, are standing behind this guy in his right to fly a flag from a flagpole. And a local radio station held a rally yesterday where 100 people showed up and they marched down and hoisted the flag. And people have been sending this guy money because he's not a very wealthy fellow. He's a retired ex-Marine. And he just believes very strongly that he wants to fly a flag, and he wants to fly a flag from a flagpole. Now, I understand that it's not, they're not saying that you cannot fly the flag. What they're saying is that that you cannot fly it from a flagpole, and that the fine is a court-imposed fine, and he is in violation of a court order. However, let's look at the bigger picture here for just a moment. You know, the Community Associations Institute has always maintained that, A, they represent homeowners, B, that homeowner associations are democracy up close and personal. I personally think they're a little too personal, but that's my opinion. And that if the homeowners don't like some of these rules, they can always change them. Well, it seems to me that the homeowners are speaking here. I just wonder if anybody is listening here. Ken, a while ago at the top of the hour, we were talking about embezzlement in associations. We've got an embezzlement story here. A guy by the name of Biagio Benmento, who swindled 10 Treasure Coast homeowner associations out of more than $600,000, was sentenced to 51 months in in federal prison during a hearing Wednesday in West Palm Beach. Alfred Laidman, a former vice president of the River Pines Homeowner Association in Port Salerno, said the former property manager deserved more prison time. Mento repeatedly forged the Laidman's signature. Apparently one of the things that Mento did, and he's serving a 10-year prison sentence for adding zeros to a $30 check to make it read $30,000 instead of $30. Laidman said he and his neighbors, who are still in court trying to recoup their losses, aren't counting on seeing any of the money from Mento. I doubt if anybody really feels that they will get restitution from that man, Laidman said. Laidman is the vice president of one of the homeowners associations that was built. So, you see, Ken, I mean, you can get stuck with something like that in a homeowners association.
Well, I can tell you there exactly is one of the weaknesses of a city or county permitting process. When they agreed to those homeowner association bylaws, or first of all, they probably shouldn't have let that developer come in with that. They probably should. Each city probably should have its own standardized bylaws and rules that homeowners associations operate under. But if they had done something, which we would have done in the construction industry, as a city government, I can tell you if I was sitting on that, there would have been a bonded requirement to cover any and all employees in that homeowners association, so that they couldn't, if they did abscond with money, it would be in a bond covering it. You see, that's a very serious weakness of somebody who can take your money away in a really non-government, elected government process, and have no bonded requirements, that if they're dishonest, it's potluck if you get your money back. That's a terrible weakness in any homeowners association that doesn't require that.
Well, I had a manager on the show some weeks ago. He called in and complained about my show, said I was not being very nice to associations. So I said, all right, come on, and you talk about it. You be nice to associations. And one of the stories, actually, I had two embezzlement stories, one out of Arizona and one out of Florida, this one, when it first broke. And you know what his response was? He blamed the homeowners because they didn't buy insurance.
Didn't buy what?
Insurance to cover them in case there was embezzlement.
I see.
The homeowner's fault.
I see. Sure. Well,
now you see what we're dealing with here, Ken, right?
First of all, I think a homeowners association was created as an annuity for most developers.
Want to elaborate on that?
Well, the developer wants to continue taking your money away as long as he's still in control of the project. And I wouldn't be surprised, but at one time maybe the homeowners association might have been a good idea to set certain standards and so forth. But I think along the way, as always, I've never known a developer who wouldn't look to pull an extra penny out of everybody. And he said, well, I'm going to be on this property for the next 3 or 4 years before I sell it out. Del Webb, I think, probably controlled their property 7 or 8 years. And so they're collecting these homeowner association monies. And in the beginning, you generally don't have the same problems as you do when people begin to wake up and get over the excitement of the newness. They begin to look at it in a little different eye. And probably by that time, the developer has taken his profits out and gone, and he's left the people with probably not even a very qualified board of directors running the homeowners association. So I think it really has become just another cash flow for the developer while he's in the process of developing all the land. And he really doesn't care too much. In fact, he doesn't care at all after he gets out of the development.
What do you know what they're doing in Florida? They have what they call community development districts in Florida, CDDs, and the developers will set up a CDD, and you know when they buy these thousands of acres of land, you're going to, especially in Florida, you're going to find land that's too marshy and you know you can't build it, so they declare this to be common property and it's supposed to be undisturbed and it's part of the master plan. What they do is they sell this land to the CDD for millions of dollars. It's useless, useless land.
Right.
And what they do to raise the funds for this, they float bonds, and then they leave the homeowners paying off these bonds.
With the debt.
In addition to having to deal with the homeowners association, so you know they own the homeowners own the recreational facilities. The CDD owns all the useless stuff, but you know the way they're financing that is through bonds.
Right.
The builder's charging them. I mean, he's passing along all the costs to the homeowners. It's added on to the base price of the homes. They're stuck with the common ownership concept, and plus now they're stuck with CDDs. And again, there's absolutely no oversight there, none whatsoever. It's just, you know.
Well, yes, and of course, any court will say, "Well, you had available all of the regulations that you signed into." But you see, that really doesn't fly.
No, it doesn't.
And I'm beginning to think that maybe we need a standardized homeowners association legal clause added by Congress to everyone. You know, Congress could go and do things retroactive and could care less. So maybe this is one place they ought to do something, and they ought to state in there that unless you have as the seller have sat down and explained every line and the meaning of every line in this agreement, you actually do not have a legal agreement even though they signed it.
Well, the way they look at this is a contract of adhesion. Some of them are 300 pages long.
I know that, and I would never, ever put one nickel in down payment on anything like a document like that.
Yeah. Let's switch over to new urbanism.
Okay.
This is the trendy new concept, and this is what they're doing. You know, we're going back to my quote from Las Vegas, the no-brow bit.
Right.
And they're selling them. This is, we're going back to a Norman Rockwell era. And when I asked you about it last night, you laughed. And you said, there's nothing new about this.
No. That probably started in the UK 800 years ago. I remember in my studies in architecture that the planners in the UK had that idea as far back as anybody thought of planning. And they had the idea that you should build only a community only of a certain size, and then you should have a green area and separate the community, and then it could, another one could grow and be to a certain size, and then you'd have a green area. And I think it all started out probably with a good idea, but eventually the politicians were talked into selling the green areas to developers, so there's no green areas left.
Well, the new urbanism that the industry is pushing right now is what they're trying to do is they're trying to recreate urban centers in the suburbs. And what they're saying is that we're going to try and force a sense of community on everyone. So we're going to build the houses with... First of all, we're going to get rid of the vehicles. So we're going to build these really narrow little streets. And we're going to relegate the vehicles to alleys in the back. The garages are going to be in the back. So we don't see the cars. They don't exist. You know, we can go back to a Norman Rockwell era type of living. We're not going to have front lawns. The house is going to be, there's going to be no setback, basically. You're going to be sitting right on the sidewalk. And each house is going to have a front porch. And we're not going to have individual mailboxes. We're going to cluster the mailboxes so that people then are forced to walk down and get their mail from a local centralized delivery system. And therefore, they're going to be forced to mingle with their neighbors and meet their neighbors and talk to their neighbors. And that's what's going to create this wonderful sense of community.
Well, it never did work that way.
No, it didn't.
I think you could, I think Georgetown is a good example of houses that are about 18 feet wide and 50 feet deep. That have steps on the front and no yard in the back, and maybe if you're lucky, there's a you can park on the curb or something like that. And I would suspect, and then we have it right here in St. Paul. I mean, St. Paul is a very, very old town, and I would suspect some of those neighbors haven't talked to each other. And they might have lived there for 25 years. That is no inducement to people. Of people talking together. People talk together when they get into, go to church, when they go to the music, theater, performing arts and places like that. They talk to each other at work, once in a while, you know, they may get acquainted, in a grocery store even, but, I have to tell you, in the days after our development here in Bloomington, on this property where I'm sitting right now, we often talk about, and we had 7,500 square foot lots, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Well, today, they'd like to put about three or four houses on that 7,500 square foot lot.
Exactly.
But I remember, you know, that we used to have block parties here. We used to get permission to, block off the streets here. We have a tee out here. We used to get permission to block it off over the weekend. And we all had young families, and we all got together. But you know that this property in this area hasn't changed, but the people's minds have changed, and they don't have block parties anymore. So if you put them closer together, they're probably more likely to dislike each other more than they are even with the space they have in between them today.
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point. I think the more you're on top of each other, the more you want to protect what's your whatever private space you have.
Well, excuse me. Let me just give you a really good example.
Okay.
Where Agnes and I live in Las Vegas. We have a little bigger lot than we have a corner lot, so we have 6,000 square feet. Now in Vegas, people are think you're nuts when they go there the first time. All of our lots are separated by walls. We have 6 foot high block walls, if you can imagine,
mm-hmm.
around all our property. Well, let me tell you something. Agnes and I have we had an acre and a half here in Bloomington with 50 oak trees, and I said, no acre and a half of lawn, no 50 oak trees. We went out there and we went to desert landscaping in a small lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you, those walls are just great. Agnes and I get into our lap pool at night and do our swimming, and we have our privacy.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you that more than once I even do it in a la natural. So I couldn't do that in this new world they're talking about.
No, you couldn't, because you'd be on top of each other. That's fabulous.
Well, you take the human aspect out of life, and you know what? The energy comes out somewhere else, and I think you hit it right on the head. The more you crowd people together, I believe the more you're going to create a very, very unhappy population, and the more likely you are to have angry people causing trouble within the neighborhood.
That's exactly what you have right now, is a whole lot of very angry people.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
And I think that's part of the reason right there. You're president of the Nevada, and we're changing gears here because
yes.
we're running out of time, but you are president of the Nevada Seniors Coalition,
right.
And your motto is a better quality of life for seniors, their children, and grandchildren.
Right.
And one of the things that you're looking at is the natural resources you have, the air quality you have in Las Vegas, and the natural resources. You also, in one of the papers you sent me, you talk about the water, the
yes.
lack of water. You want to touch on that just a little bit?
Sure. People seem to forget that the closer you crowd people together, the higher the demand is on the air quality and the water. And I have to tell you, if we can't breathe clean air, and if we don't have good water, you and I are going to be like a tree that got smothered and it begins to die. Out in Las Vegas, it is just terrible what they've done out there. The air quality, we're close to the top worst air quality in the United States, and that happened in a short 10 or 15 years. And what's really amazing is our water quality, and we're unusual in that the land in the whole valley slopes down to the southeast. So for tens of thousands of acres, all the drainage is down one slot called the Las Vegas Wash. And it's a big bay where it enters into Lake Mead, the man-made lake. What's very interesting, these stupid bureaucrats and politicians many years ago, it wasn't a problem, they built the sewer discharge into the Las Vegas Wash, which discharged into the Las Vegas Bay, and that's also where they built their freshwater intake. Now
so you're
today,
saying it's not fresh.
Now today we're dumping 120 million gallons of sewage effluent into the bay that is within 6 miles of our taking out 250 million gallons of fresh water a day, and they want to double it. If you can imagine anything more brainless than that. So between destroying the air and dumping our sewage, treated sewage into the water source where our fresh water is, how could you do worse than that? But that is happening, I'm afraid, all over where boom is booming like it is. Good sense has gone out the window for the dollar.
So basically tie this back into smart growth, where we're going to...
And you know what? That's their saying out there, smart growth.
Yeah, so we're taking this smart growth and we're just zipping people all on top of each other. We've talked about the social problems. We've talked about all of the other issues that we're dealing with. But now it's putting a tremendous strain on our natural resources. We've got problems with air quality. We've got fresh water that ain't so fresh from what you're saying. And although you're talking predominantly about Las Vegas, that's not necessarily limited to Las Vegas.
Well, you can go to Phoenix where there's fast growth. You can go to just about any place like that, and you'll see it's some kind of a fever that's hit the politicians and the bureaucrats.
I like that. That's exactly right. I mean, this fever, it sort of throws people into this wacky dance or whatever it is they're doing. But would this be alleviated if perhaps we didn't concentrate such tremendous growth on a small, relatively small area, and if we allowed it to grow out? Since apparently we do have the space, we're only using currently 3% of our land mass.
Well, I think Minneapolis and St. Paul is a fairly good example of that. Here about 4 or 5 years ago, and they tend to have larger lots. They have the Minneapolis area here has more parks per capita than just about any place in the whole country. And about 4 or 5 years ago, some bureaucrat thought they ought to have smog tests on the cars. They ran it for 3 years, and it was a total flop because they didn't find anybody that was creating a problem. And here to this day, you will not see a gray cloud over this whole Twin Cities area. And I think it's primarily because of they didn't cut all the trees down to begin with. They didn't disturb all the soil to begin with. And they did have much larger lots and many more parks. Now, I'll have to tell you, their freeway system is bumper to bumper, but that's their fault. We offered a totally different method of carrying vehicles on an automated guideway for probably one-tenth the price of highways, but they haven't been smart enough to do it. So there are things that can be done, but it's the mental attitude of the people in charge.
So,
and one more thing I'll tell you about the Twin Cities that's unique, which would probably a lot of people think is crazy. There are, at my last knowledge, 125 incorporated communities in the six-county area of Minneapolis-St. Paul. And the reason is, as they grew, people said, hey, we like our lifestyle like this, and they created their own little community. And some of these communities, like Edina, maybe has 25,000 people in it to this day after 50 years. But you know what? They have preserved everything they have there of value, and they just love it that way. So don't ever let anybody tell you more government, bigger government, and less entities is better for people, because big government usually creates a mess.
Well, big government not only created a mess, but in our efforts to get away from it, what we've done is created these private governments,
right,
and added more and more layers of government. So,
right,
you know, in for instance, where I live, we've got the federal, we've got the state, we've got the county, we've got the homeowners association.
Right.
If you move to Florida, add to that list, you've got your CDDs as well. Now, do we really need to be supporting five layers of government? I don't think so, personally, but that's just me.
Well, I've been around 80 years, and when I was in high school, I guess somehow or other, the teacher in civics turned me on to good government, and I've been working on good government ever since I got out of college, and I'll have to tell you, I'm appalled at what we're doing to ourselves,
Ken,
with more government and bad government.
And it's not, we're just getting worse. It's not, I mean, we've created environmental problems, we've created social problems, we're increasing the cost of living dramatically. And it's not working, is it?
Well, I tell you, Shu, I blame it a lot on our educational system. My older son is 49. And 40-some years ago, my wife had looked at our educational system here, and I said, no way, I'm not putting them in the public system. I put them in private school. I educated both my sons all the way through college in the private school system because I didn't like what the public school system was doing 40-some years ago, and it's so much worse today. So maybe a lot of our problem comes from the fact that our educational system is turning out people who don't even know what this country's about.
No brow, in other words, right?
That's correct.
Ken, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, it's nice visiting with you and everybody else.
I really appreciate it. I hope you'll come back sometime. I have a feeling we've got a ton of stuff that we could talk about that we just didn't get to yet.
Very well, and I enjoyed it very much.
And enjoy the rest of your vacation.
Alrighty.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And thanks, everybody, for joining me on the comments today. We'll be here.